Hi, this is Dave Watkins. I'm from Fruit Smart in Grandview, Washington, and I'm talking to you on Cider Chat.
Episode 17. Hello and welcome to a Cider Chat. This is a weekly podcast where we check in with the cider world and cider makers and enthusiasts and bring that chat to you. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am your Cider MC. And woo, I am just floating on air because I spent a week with cider folk out west in Portland, Oregon, for the United States Cider Maker Association. And I imagine anyone listening to this podcast right now who attended, you're probably one part, well, tired, but two-thirds totally energized because it was so exciting. So many great ciders to taste, amazing conversations. My head is truly spinning. I fell in love with the area. It couldn't have been done better. Kudos to all the folks that made it possible. I want to thank specifically James Kahn from the Wandering Angus Cidery and Anthem Cider. He helped orchestrate CiderCon. Also, Ellen and Sue for making it all possible, helping me get some room for recording. I got some amazing, amazing chats lined up for Ciderville that will be coming up on the next couple weeks here, both folks in the U.S. and folks around the world. And this week, we will be having some chats from CiderCon. I want to give you a little synopsis, a little feeling as if you were there walking down the street with me. So we'll get to that in just a moment. But ooh, there was just so much. I mean, where do I begin? If you want to go to a real cider-centric place, head to Portland. It's amazing. There's all these bars, Portland Cider, Cider Bite, Cider Riot, Reverend Nat's Tap Room. There's so many fusions. Like, check it out. Like, you go to your typical takeout Chinese restaurant, and there's not just sake on the list. There's amazing cider options to have and craft beer. This town is like foodie, orgasmic, mouth-watering sensation. It's just a really, really cool place. So I fell in love once again with Portland, Oregon. I guess you could fall in love with the city over and over again, and I'm kind of head over heels with it. Oh, this is the wrap. What we're going to be doing this week is I have a couple recordings. I wanted to give you a demi-tasse of the experience there. I did a Periscope of the trade show, and I thought that was kind of cool, but that's kind of come and gone already because that's the way Periscope worked. You have to be subscribed to Periscope, and you can subscribe to my feed, which is at Cider Chat, and you just get notified when it's going live, but it's only up for like 24 hours. I did record another Periscope with Bill Bradshaw when he gave his talk at the Science Museum, and it was fantastic. I didn't do the whole video feed on that, but I got a good portion of his talk, and we'll be posting that, but we're going to stay tuned. I had a chit-chat with Bill, an amazing guy. He wrote a fantastic book on ciders that you got to get, but again, we're going to hold that for now. This is the way this episode is going to roll. We're going to listen to two different juice suppliers and really critical information for anyone in the cider trade or who is planning on going there. Because what we do know that there is a shortage of bittersweet fruit, the cider apples, bitter sharp, those flavor profiles that can really keep your acid level down for your cider. You know, Americans are known for very acidic cider. And that's cool if you like that. But if you want that more savory, umami type of flavor profile, you want to have those bitter, sweet fruits. So the first fellow, Dave, is going to be speaking to us from Washington State, from Fruit Smart. And I think it's really, really some key points here that you're going to be wanting to listen to when he chats around planting of cider apples and what the orchardists are thinking about it, the big producers. So we'll follow up after the chat, and I'll chit-chat with you about that. Before we go there, before we go to Dave's, I'm going to bring you into Portland, Oregon, so that you get a little bit of a demi-tasse, a feeling for the city. So I'm going to take you across a bridge because I walked from downtown Portland, where the convention was, across the river over to the Festival of Lights, which took place at the Science Building, where Bill Bradshaw gave his talk and where CiderCon held an amazing cider tasting in the entire Science Building. Fun stuff. At the Cider Chat Facebook page, there's a little clip, a little video I took where, you know, some cider folks, you'll notice James Kahn from Wandering Angus in the background were playing with some of the experiments. We had, you know, you put a bunch of cider folks in a science museum where we're really geeked out already with cider and the fundamentals of it, and you have all these, like, toys to play with. Yes, it's just kids gone wild. Too much fun. So I wanted to just take you along the city, give you a sense of Portland, because I do think it's a great place to go, a very cider-centric place, an amazing craft libation area. And then we'll go right into the first chat with Dave, and then I'll catch you on the flip side. There's so much energy in the city. I'm walking across the bridge, heading over to the Science Building. There's the Winter Festival of Lights happening, which feels a little incongruent to me because it is quite warm out, not really feeling wintry, but what a spectacular city. Just on the middle of this bridge, there's a yacht set up, a little harbor, right? All these boats parked. And I'm walking to the east side of the river. Let's see, I think that is upstream, is a suspension bridge with really nice white cables all lit in green, and that's the direction where the science is. And then there is this like cacophony of blue, green, it's the changing piers that go across the river, kind of like, oh, that's another bridge. There's just so much light here, it's almost sometimes hard to differentiate. And what you're hearing in the background are the cars that are going across on the bridge that I'm crossing. It's a graded bridge. And, it's a cool sound, huh? Well, this is Portland, a land that is just thriving. I mean, I'm walking across this bridge, and even higher than I am are two highways going north and south, and they're up above as if they're in a skyline highway, and yet it works because it's just like circling around like a bee's nest of energy that somehow just works, and that's cool. And now I'm walking towards this Festival of Lights, and you can hear the music start coming a little bit more as we're coming closer. We're down along the water on the east side of Portland, right by the Science Center, and there's music. Let's go there. There's a little taste of the scenes behind the scenes, which always really, I think, is part of the terroir of an area. It's not just what we drink, what we feel from the people around us, and their smiles, lots of them here, and the music. Let's go over for a second to hear a little bit more. Go Portland, go Oregon. I really love this, and my only regret is that I didn't get out into the mountains, but hey, it's a small one to hang out with so many amazing cider folk. Yeah. All right. So this is CiderCon 2016. Some little snippets here and there. I think the stories will speak for themselves. And meanwhile, you and I can just grab a glass and join this chat. This is Dave Watkins, Director of Sales and Marketing at FruitSmart.com in Granville, Washington.
Fruit Smart's been a big presence here for quite a while, hasn't it? And a really important sponsor for CiderCon.
They were one of the charter vendors when they started here I think it was 4 years ago. They started bringing suppliers in back in Chicago. So we've done that show as well. Now that it's in Portland, we're out of Washington State, so this made it a much shorter drive.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
But it's a great category for us. So we do a lot of NFC juice, which is fresh pressed juice that's a base for cider. We do a lot of it in the juice industry, but in the last 4 or 5 years, the cider category has continued to just explode. And obviously, being in the Northwest, this is a hotbed for all the cider makers.
You know, yeah.
A real epicenter. And so it's been good for us as an industry. And it's certainly good to be part of this kind of industry where it's growing and taking off.
Absolutely. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the roots of Fruit Smart.
The roots of Fruit Smart go back to the early 80s. We used to do some taking seeds out of pumice. You know, if you press it, you end up with a pressed cake. You know, made seeds. It was kind of a dry product. And then in the 2000s, we kind of got into liquid products. We have a facility in Granville today that's 128,000 square feet, over 13 acres. And we press a lot of apple. We do that 52 weeks a year, 5 to 7 days a week. Mainly because we're in Washington, which is 60% of the apples grown in the United States are in Washington State. So we do apple every week of the year. But then we do all the other fruits of the Northwest as well. So all the other tree fruits, you know, apple, peach, pear, cherries, plums, apricots. Do all the berries of the Northwest. So blackberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry. Do them into juices, a lot of juice concentrates, as well as some purees. And then dry some of that pumice down into a fiber, which is kind of like a flour. Separate out the seeds, do some seed oils as well as some seed powder. Trying to use every piece of that fruit.
Seed, you know? Powder. So what does that mean? What's going on there?
So you take the seed and you first press it to get the oil out, which grape seed oil you probably heard of. You drizzle a little bit over salads as cooking with. We do cranberry and blueberry seed oil as well, which is used primarily in the cosmetic industry. And the same thing with the seed powder. It's either goes in the cosmetic or a lot of nutraceutical applications. Because cranberry still has a lot of, you know, antioxidants and so on, it becomes a filler and an ingredient in a lot of nutraceutical applications as well. You know?
What is that nutraceutical?
You know, so like pills. If you ever had like a cranberry extract pill.
Yes. You
know?
Yes.
Years ago, there was a certain amount of extract in there, and the pill would be filled with rice flour. But if it's not a very big pill, you don't think you're getting your money's worth.
Right.
So now they kind of they can fill that with other cranberry, so whether it be cranberry fiber or cranberry seed or, you know, powder. There's a big use of that.
Wow.
But the juice and juice concentrates are the biggest part of the company. The biggest single volume by far is our NFC juices, which all the growth in the juice category, as if you go to a grocery store, the center of the store, bottled juices is not growing. All the growth is in the refrigerated section. You see a lot of 8 to 10 ounce ones. It's a lot of vegetable blends. There's not a lot of just straight apple juice in there. If you look at a kale drink or other things, apple juice is in there as well. It's kind of the lead ingredient. You know, very hard to drink straight kale. And nobody will come back the second time. But you mix kale with apple and other berry juices, it makes it a very palatable, very pleasant, you know, drink, and you're getting fruits and vegetables together. And that same base, which a cold pressed, unfiltered apple juice, is just a great base for cider makers as well. For the ones that don't want to grow their own trees, don't want to, you know, press their own apples. They're good fermenters or good bottlers or good marketers, but they don't want to do the fresh apple part of it.
Right.
That's all we do. We're not a grower, and we don't have bottling lines. We're not a retail product, so we're not competing with them on that regard. We're strictly an ingredient supplier.
Right, I know. And just for folks out in Ciderville hearing this, so NFC stands for?
Not from concentrate. So you can make cider from juice. You can make cider from concentrate. It's not as good. If you want to make a great cider, you have to start with just single strength juice. That's the base of it. It's not a concentrate that's been diluted back as much. So we do a not from concentrate, cold pressed. And if you try some, you'll find that it's a strong apple flavor, has a lot of mouthfeel still in it. And it's kind of like would be the old farm stand, you know, apple juice, sweet help us, you know, sweet cider, not hard cider.
So, what can you tell me about this juice you have here on the table?
This particular juice is a 12.7 brick, and it will have a little tartar than you would have for our juice customers. We bring up the acidity by bringing in more Granny Smith. So on a single strength basis, it would be a 0.47 titratable acid. So it makes a good base for cider folks. They want that little more tartness. The juice people don't want that much tartness. That's not what you would drink, you know, every day. But for a base for cider, you need the acid, you need that tannins, you need that whole flavor base. Then you can do your different yeast and your own fermentation cycles and so on and make some great ciders, which if you've been around this show, you know, in the last couple of days, there's been a great selection of ciders.
Unbelievable. So let's say that I'm a cider maker. I want to start up. I'm like in Arizona or I'm in Texas. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I want to get some juice from Fruit Smart. So what would be the steps? And how about if we just talk about, they'd call you up, of course, right? And what can they think about in small quantities? So they're starting out and they want to be playing with that a bit and figuring out what.
You know, we do that now with a lot of different folks from the startups as well as some that are in different stages of that. We start off with, we send you a gallon sample so you can kind of play with a little bit, kind of get other than just one couple ounces here you're drinking at the show.
Sure,
we'll send you a gallon to kind of start with.
Nice.
And then we step up to, we have a 45 gallon drum, a 275 gallon tote, and then eventually you get to a 5,500 gallon truck tanker. And we ship throughout the United States. I mean, we're up in Washington State. The farthest plant we ship now is a cidery down in Miami, Florida. So we pretty much can cover the U.S.
Nice.
The juice is great. The product's great. Freight, obviously, is always a difficult part because you realize how big the United States is when you have to ship across it.
Right. And you're not doing concentrate.
There.
And I know concentrate as that the water's been extracted.
Correct. Yeah.
But you're not doing
We do it apple concentrate.
You will do that.
I mean, we do concentrates for a lot of different fruits, but for apple, we do the NFC, which is the single-strength fresh-pressed juice.
Right.
If you want concentrate, we have that available as well. So we do it on the full spectrum of deals. So
nice.
It depends on your own application. It's not for us to say what's better or worse. That's you as a cider maker determine how you want to make your juice.
Right. Now, didn't Fruit Smart do a presentation here at CiderCon?
We did. We did a presentation on to press or not to press, and kind of went through the three different types of juices. One was a cold pressed, you know, NFC juice, where it's unfiltered. We also had a heat treated NFC juice. It's filtered. And then we took concentrate and diluted it back to single strength. So you could kind of see the difference.
Yeah.
We talked through the steps of how those different products are made, but then we had samples of it, so you could actually taste the difference between that. And
nice.
It's then your application drives that, is what are you looking to do, which is the best. The different price points become different as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cold pressed, the yield is not as strong out of a ton of apples because you're truly just cold pressing that fruit. In the heat treated, you add a little heat, but you add a little enzymes to break apart the apple, so you get a little more gallons per ton, which makes it a little less expensive. And then concentrate would be the least expensive because you're not shipping water, you know, for any distance. You're basically taking all that sugar, concentrating it down. We're basically boiling it in a vacuum. That's how the concentrator works. So now you're boiling water at 176 versus 212. But then you have a gallon of concentrate, which when you reconstitute it back, makes 8 gallons of juice. So it all depends on how you want to do it. And there are ciders on either end of the spectrum.
I think it's a good asset for new cider makers or current, you know, as the industry's growing and you need to get that supply of apples. It's fantastic having a provider like yourself sending that out and being able to send that across country or even outside of this country too.
We do. We do a little bit into Canada and we do some Asian business, not on cider yet, but you know, it's yet to come. Cider's still kind of a UK and definitely growing in the United States right now.
Yeah.
Kind of a resurgence, if you will. But it's a great conference and it's a great industry. And it's a great partnership between cider makers and ourselves. You know, the cider varieties and so on. And there are more cider varieties being planted. Primarily, most of them now are on the West Coast, kind of the west side of the state, and a lot of them are being planted by cider makers. There's just not enough volume of it yet, so they're doing that.
Do you see
cider.
People kind of paying attention
you
a little
know,
bit more?
Every grower is paying attention to it.
Yeah.
Every grower is interested. interested. Every grower is agricultural, so they're a little skeptic. They're, you know, they ask, like, well, to plant a tree, you know, it's 7 years before it's full blossom. So there's a long time frame, and it's still
investment.
The growth, you know, of cider has been so rapid in such a short period of time that in a typical grower community, and we brought this up on a number of occasions with the folks we work with, is I don't know that how big cider is going to be 7 years from now. I'm going to make an investment now. You know, and again, cider apples can only be used for cider. No one's eaten them. That's why they made cider out of them. But the apple industry has done well in the last, you know, 10 years or so. There's been per capita consumption is up on apples, mm-hmm. so they've done well.
Right.
But they're also, the crop is getting big enough that they're also looking for some diversity, and that's where you get a few people now thinking about it.
Yeah, interesting.
It may not be huge blocks, but every orchard has to have a different tree as a pollinator. Right now, they're primarily Manchurian crab apple trees.
Yeah.
You see them, they're different throughout their deal. There are some growers that thought, okay, maybe I'll put in some cider varieties as my pollinators, or maybe I'll plant the outskirts of the orchard, which usually get a little bit more damage. They could be cider apples because I don't care. They don't have to be pretty because they're going to go to cider fruit.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So there's some of that, and there's still a lot of growers that are interested, but to take that next leap is a hurdle at the moment that they're still considering.
I think we both know it right here, seeing what's going on, that 7 years from now,
the demand is going to be a hot commodity. There'll be progress every year, but it's not leaps and bounds.
Yeah, interesting.
So, you know, a lot of cideries here, they're done with culinary fruit. I think the American public is still learning about cider.
Yeah.
So does it have to be all bittersweets? It's kind of like beer. It's kind of like wine. There's box wine and there's excellent wine.
Right.
The same thing can be true on cider, and you have that.
Yeah.
A lot of drinkers doing it, they don't all have to have a premium heritage, bittersweet, and Kingston Black, and all the other varieties that go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Can we make a decent cider out of culinary fruit with other difference with yeast and other things? Absolutely. And you saw it today. I mean,
yes.
You saw it in the last several days. There's supposedly over 1,000 ciders that were here, especially most of them being served at the open reception. You saw many were there. A lot of that's being made with culinary fruit. But that's the only volume of apples that are available today,
mm-hmm.
and they're doing very well. Can we continue to add some, you know, true cider varieties to that and make their quality even better? Absolutely. It'll continue that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the whole category continues to grow, that there's still going to be a lot of room for culinary fruit. You're still going to have the high end with the heritage varieties and the cider varieties. And we just want the whole category. We're still, you know, talking about, you know, 1% of the beer category can get to 2%, can get to 3%. That's going to take a lot of apples to do that.
True that. Baldwin, what about Baldwin out here? Do you have
not
that?
Not a variety.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Again, I mean, if you look at Washington State, the top five varieties are, and it's 83% of our total crop out here is five varieties, which is Red Delicious, Galas, Fuji's, Granny, and Honeycrisp in that order. And then Golden would be number six. When you take up that much, say you're talking about 85-86% of this crop being those five dessert varieties, and Honeycrisp being the new kid on the block, that's pretty amazing.
I do love that Honeycrisp.
It is, and it makes it decent cider, whether people do think, but it's not that little nuance of flavor that you have with the true heritage varieties in the different blends.
You're right, I think you made a good point, is that, you know, there's a cider for every palate.
Exactly.
And thus there's so many apples to choose from, and it really will come down to the cider maker and what they're doing. So I'll be curious to kind of check in with you again and see as it goes forward.
Year to year and see how it affects.
Yeah.
But I think there'll still be a huge market for the culinary apples because the whole market is growing so large. The big three aren't using even NFC. They're using concentrates, and look how big the category is. So the category continues to grow year after year. I'm even growing the same percentage, but, you know, when you were so small, you can grow by 50%, you're still kind of small. Now we're still growing, but the percentage might only be, you know, single digits. But that's still a lot of growth, you know, and there's still a lot of opportunity still in the marketplace.
Thank you for being on this podcast.
Thank you, Cider Chat. Mm-hmm.
I think you heard what I heard, which was the question of where will cider be in 7 years from now? Now, isn't that interesting based upon the fact that we were just at this huge gathering, probably the largest gathering of cider makers thus far in one single area? And there's still a question from the apple growers whether this is sustainable. So shout it from the mountaintops that you want this type of apple, that you want cider apples. Let folks know at Fruit Smart that you would indeed encourage them to encourage their orchardists to start growing these apples, because the demand's going to be there. And I think that this is a really key piece to be noticing. And you're going to notice that in the next chat too. But before we go to the next chat with Ian Marlowe from the UK, I just want to say thank you to Vivian Lee from Lucky Rabbit Snacks. She and I got together in Portland, Oregon during CiderCon, and she passed me over some amazing gluten-free snacks. And you know, the thing about cider, it is gluten-free. And you would be missing a point there for all the folks who really, really need that if you don't let that be known to your consumers. That's just my two cents of it. And when you kind of partnership with somebody like Lucky Rabbit, you get to not only provide a libation that is gluten-free, but also snacks that are gluten-free. You know, I did an article a couple of years ago for Brewing News on how to do a beer fest well. And really, it doesn't matter if it's a beer fest or a cider fest. One thing we find out is that it's all about the pH of our own system and maintaining that, so that you could go through a festival like CiderCon healthy on the other side. And part of that is maintaining your pH and being aware of which foods are acidic and which foods are alkaline or ash. And so you really want to watch that and eat wisely. For instance, often you're having something like cider, which can be very acidic, and then you serve foods like cheese or bread, which are also acidic too. We're going to have more about this. I'm going to be talking to the nutritionist probably again that I did the original article with, and some other folks down the line. So if you're a nutritionist out there, if this is a topic that really speaks to you, send me a line, Rhea@ciderchat.com, and we'll hook this up, because I think this is really key. So again, thank you, Lucky Rabbit. Thank you, Vivian. She's amazing. She's based out of Portland. They have an online store if you want to get this for your folks taking cider to go or at your tasting room, really addressing that gluten-free option in an easy way. I ate some of the deep chocolate no-grain nibblers on my plane ride home, and I just needed a little bit, and I was so full. It was awesome. She's an awesome person. Go to LuckyRabbitSnacks.com. Thanks again, Vivian. All right, now we're going to go to a chat with Ian Marlowe. He is from the UK, and he is a commercial director. He travels broadly for Krill, Michelle. He's been doing this for a long time, kind of packaging the juice, much like Fruit Smart does, to also an international audience. And they do have the bittersweet fruits. So I'm not promoting either business. I just wanted to give Ciderville an options that are out there. And of course, there's also Hood River. There's other places too, all around the U.S. And I think it's important to kind of know what they are seeing in terms of the cider market. So with Ian, he was here to kind of get a sense of where cider makers in the U.S. are going. Are they going to want these juices? Is this a viable market? And again, just like with Fruit Smart, we really want to shout it from the mountaintop that, yes, we want these juices. Plant the cider apples, because it's a little scary for a farmer to plant something in the ground that isn't edible. And if it's not going to be used, there's not an incentive. So it's important not to stay in our little cubicle and then start asking when it's like a little too late. Now's the time to start sending the message out to juice providers, to the orchardists, that there is a demand. Because there's a big difference using cider apples and non-cider apples. It's not that it can't be done, or it can't be done well, but if we really want to provide the full range, and I know that cider makers are really key to this, to really pushing the envelope and going deep down with the apple, you're going to want some of these options. So let's take it with Ian. I'll let him introduce this next segment and chat about some international trade with juice. And before we get started with this chat with Ian Marlowe, I'd like to ask you to consider sharing this podcast now with your friends and fellow cider folk. Cider Chat Podcast grows as you grow. And that's how we all roll in Ciderville.
Hi, this is Ian Marlow from Kill Me Chef in the UK.
Everybody's always really interested in hearing about juice.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us all about a little bit of what you do exactly?
Well, initially I started off as a juice importer, importing all kinds of fruit juice into the UK.
Into
the UK. Okay. Predominantly for the cider industry. So I was bringing in dessert, culinary apple juice concentrate, and bittersweet apple juice concentrate from France, predominantly.
Interesting.
And then suddenly, as the UK cider market started increasing their own production of bittersweet, their reliance on bittersweet from France was not so much. Mm-hmm. So I felt that that was an opportunity to start expanding overseas further. So that's why I'm now a global juice trader.
And so global, what does that mean? Like, what countries are you
working? I'm selling juice all over the place, into the United States, into Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, mm-hmm. Into the Caribbean, and into continental Europe.
That's interesting you say the Caribbean, because, you know, I have talked to different startups on islands.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what? You know, what are you thinking of? But now we're in this global economy, mm-hmm. that you could bring in quality juice, and even though they might not have apple trees there.
Well, it's not apple tree. I mean, it depends on what their requirements are. So into the Caribbean, we're shipping in grape juice, from the Southern Hemisphere.
Right.
But then we're bringing in other stuff, sort of tropicals, things like mango.
But you could bring in apple juice if somebody wanted that.
If there was a demand for it, yes,
right,
I could do.
Right. Yeah. So how does that work if somebody's, you know, not in a climate that is conducive? And of course, this is a cider podcast, so yeah, I'm going to keep it kind of on the apple focus. What are the steps here? Is there kind of like you would be going to the nursery and looking at your different varieties, or do you create blends?
It's a combination of the two. We're looking at what the market requires, what they're looking for. We can then either give a single varietal juice out there, or we can prepare blends for them and then ship the blends out. So in the case of some berry fruit, it will be a mix of summer fruit berries or autumn fruit berries, and we'll ship that out. Obviously, in some countries, the requirements are relatively small, so again, pack size is a guiding factor.
Okay.
So we can offer product packed in from 20-kilo bag-in-box, aseptic bag-in-box, well up to bulk tankers.
Okay.
Of 25 tons.
Wow. So the source, how about the source? How does that happen? Are you going out and is it broken down even to like organic and?
We can break it down to organic and then standard product. Sourcing is built up of years of going around the industry, building up relationships with processing partners in various countries. Once we identify a product which we want to develop, mm-hmm. We will go out there and we will find a reliable partner who we can work with. We would audit the factory. We will bring them up to the standards required for the various countries where we're offering to, so they can meet all the regulations for that particular country.
Hmm. All right, I want to back up a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'm always kind of curious of the story behind something. So how did you get into something like this? Is this, you know, is it from a business, just, you know, somebody who knows how to, was a stockbroker at one point, like trading, and now it's kind of bringing out?
I used to be a wool trader, buying and selling, trading in wool.
Wool.
W-O-O-L. Exactly.
Wow.
And the wool market used to be dominated by, or still is dominated by, the Australians, which is the biggest clip.
Interesting.
And then the market,
the biggest clip,
the bottom fell out of the market, and which I just felt vulnerable. I just bought my first house, and I just felt vulnerable. I didn't want to be made redundant. So I started looking out for another job, and I found this job trading in juices.
Right.
And I thought I'd try it for 2 years, and 30 years later, I'm still doing it.
No kidding. Wow, you must really know your juices then, boy. So this is really great information for Ciderville, because, you know, obviously this is a global podcast. Yeah. A lot of Americans are really looking at, you know, are we going to get those, like, bitter apples, those really
you know, high
tannins,
demand, cider apples that we can't get so locally. So what is like the smallest kind of quantity that a person could go to, because we have those boutique.
Shipping juice from Europe to the United States does not make sense to ship it in small quantities.
Okay.
I appreciate that some of these emerging companies, they can't take bulk tankers or big full container lots.
Right.
So what I'm looking to do is bring in stock, bring in product, and then store it here in controlled ambient storage facilities, and then distribute from there to the various companies. As part of the reason I'm here, I'm just investigating the market, is the demand there, and then we'll take it from there to see where we would locate the storage.
Very cool. You don't at this point have a storage set up on the east or the west coast necessarily?
We are storing some culinary juices and some other juices in New Jersey.
Okay.
But we're looking, that would be the starting point. We'll bring in, if the demand is there, we'll bring in and start storing bittersweet there as well.
Right. So then if you are storing it, can the smaller producer then pull off of that main storage?
He'll contact us, and we would agree a price and everything, and we would deliver it to them.
Right, right. Wow.
And in some cases, we would even negotiate a yearly contract, and he could then draw it off as and when he requires it from that contract. We would ensure that the product's there for him.
Could you give us an idea of just some of the apple varieties that are, available? just some basic...
Well, these are traditional French varieties. I have bought lists with them. So things like Douce Moon, Douce Coquelin, Bedan, Marie Menard, Frequin Rouge, and Binet Rouge. These are all traditional French bittersweet varieties.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And do you also do pears?
We do pears. I mean, peri pear is short supply, and in the UK particularly, the peri pear tends to be taken up by the particular cider maker or the peri manufacturer. We tend to do culinary pears or pear juice concentrates. They wouldn't be proper peri pear, but it'll be high acid pear.
Okay. Yeah, but it's just so hard to get pears in general.
It is. I mean, certainly in Europe, I don't know about globally, but for the last 3 years have been poor years for pears.
Mm-hmm.
And then the puree manufacturers in Europe will pay a higher price on the juice processor.
Mm-hmm.
So pears are more expensive and less availability.
Mm-hmm. And can we expect that this is concentrated juice, and what I mean by that the water has been removed?
We are shipping both concentrated juice and NFC or fresh juice as well.
Okay.
Obviously fresh juice would have to be packed aseptically.
Right. And so that provides some different options there.
It does. I mean, it doesn't seem sensible. It makes little sense to ship in NFC juice from Europe when you've got so many producers in the States.
Right. And why don't we just clarify what that means?
NFC, not from concentrate.
So that's pretty interesting. So I don't know if there's a fun pun there, but you are checking out the market here and seeing if that's available. And I'm sure that demand will be there, because people are really hankering for the bittersweets.
Yes. I mean, cider in the U.S. is booming, whereas in the rest of Europe, certainly in the U.K., it is fairly flat. After Prohibition, those traditional bittersweet varieties were lost in the States, and I can understand that there is demand for the tanning, the bittersweet variety.
Do you see any other markets in the world like opening up outside of the U.S.? Like, what about like in Canada?
Well, Canada, there is demand, or there are cider makers in Canada, in the Australia, New Zealand, but they tend to tend not to use bittersweet. They tend to use their own varieties.
Mm-hmm.
There's some strong demand in South Africa, again, but they would use local varieties there.
Right. Have you had many South African ciders yourself?
There's one in sold in Europe called Savannah, which is a dry cider, which I have to say is a very nice cider.
Interesting. Savannah.
But the main variety in South Africa itself is Hunter's.
Yeah, you know, because I see that on Twitter, I see these different countries that kind of just surprise me that they have cider.
But would you believe even in the Far East, in places like Cambodia, they're producing cider there? And well, we have shipped bittersweet there in the past.
Interesting, yeah, I have seen that. And I've been in Thailand, too, yeah. I think I've seen that. And I was wondering if that was kind of more like the kind of very sweet cider, or it's, are they full flavored ciders?
They're more English style ciders.
So, oh, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, aren't they lucky?
Yeah. Well, I guess because, you know, it's English cider makers are going out there to do it. But
yeah. So what are you thinking about the cider? I don't really want to call it a renaissance or revival, because I feel like it's been like that, the little train, the choo-choo, yeah, who's got, going up the mountain, is kind of going to the crest, yeah, right now in the U.S. From your perspective of just traveling around the world,
I'm excited by it. I mean, some of the ciders I tried in the U.S. are fantastic ciders.
Yeah.
And it is a potential, is massive here.
Yes.
So I'm excited by it.
And the excitement is just contagious, isn't it?
And well, it is that, and the passion that people have for their ciders is so infectious.
It's
something that I'm not used to.
Do you think that might dribble over back to the UK a little bit and get people, you know, engaged?
We hope to, yes. I mean, because I mean, it's a traditional drink in the UK, and it has stages where it flows, where it goes up and down. But we're in a bit of a lull at the moment, and it needs a bit of an injection.
Yeah. Well, I know, being from the US, that certainly I'm always excited, thinking if I could get, you know, I'll be going over to the UK again later on this year, and I'm always like thrilled to be able to have that opportunity, because it's just like, who doesn't want to go back there and just go running through the orchard and smelling the cider right there on the land. So I think that it's a symbiotic relationship between the two countries that we could really...
There's a lot to learn from both sides.
Yeah. Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. So I'm thinking what would be really great is I'll probably take a little photo of that, and I could put that up on the website so people could see what the some of the offerings are.
Yeah.
And
I mean, we don't offer... these are the varieties, and what happens is all the apples come in and it goes into a blend. So you can't offer individual varieties.
But they could work with what the blend is that they want. So the sky's the limit there. Yeah. And I think that this really will provide for any cider makers who are currently making cider or looking towards the future, that there's so much possibility here. Do you work with South America, Latin America?
A lot of tropicals we get from. I mean, there's some varieties. I mean, on mango, for example, the most popular or the most common variety or the best variety for juicing is Alfonso, which comes from India. But there are other varieties like the Rio Magdalena, which comes from Colombia. And then we get passion fruit from Ecuador. We get orange juice. I mean, Brazil's the biggest producer of orange juice in the world, so...
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, not Florida.
Unfortunately not. I mean, Florida is a good quality, but it's the Brazilians that are the biggest.
Do they have the same problem in Brazil with, like, the freeze and have to worry?
No, that's why Florida's declined. They have a problem with disease, citrus canker and things like that. So they're moving towards the orchard. They've got massive orchards. Grows.
Isn't that something? Yeah, you know, it kind of all makes sense now. You don't really think about it. It's kind of like being the dumb consumer, like, where does the juice come from?
Well, this program in the UK is all about is, do we know where our food comes from? And because people thought, you know, British wine is made from British grapes, but it's not.
It's not, yeah. Right. Is there a name for that program?
Food Unwrapped.
Food Unwrapped.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we have something similar here in the States where people want to have labels and have an understanding, and certainly is it organic or not, and that kind of labeling. But knowing the sources are really a big deal.
Yeah.
Does the company really promote that as part of the packaging? Because I imagine in 2016, that's a big deal.
We're getting more and more requests for for traceability, field to fork is the expression.
Yeah.
So the company.
What's the expression again?
Field to fork.
Field to fork.
So you're tracing the product from the field right up to the the fork before it goes into your mouth.
And it's because their customers are asking of them. So it's that chain reaction. Everybody needs to know.
Yeah.
Certain accountability.
Yeah. I mean, in some countries, you know, they're not so strict on pesticides. So, you know, we just need to be sure that the product we're supplying is... And also, you know, we've got other things like kosher and halal certificates. And,
Sure. You know, there's a kosher beer company.
Yeah.
I think it's Schmaltz in New York.
Yeah.
And so there's a kosher beer. You know, I guarantee you where you're going to see a kosher cidery.
Because
the U.S. Yeah. I don't know. Do you know of one already?
Well, no, but I mean, certainly when we're selling to the U.S., the question is it kosher? Yes, it is.
Wow.
I mean, traditionally, the way to clarify the juice was using gelatin, which is used from bovine source.
Right.
So that's disappeared, and now we've got ultrafiltration, and so with that, we can call it kosher.
Wow. Yeah.
But it's things like that we have to do. We have to always look and, you know.
Of course.
We have a big technical department which is constantly making sure that all our products meet.
That, you know, what's interesting about that is that really gives you an appreciation for, you know, that field to fork.
Yeah, field to fork.
That it's not just so simple like that, because there's a lot of steps of making sure that it's very
clear. I mean, some of the ingredients that you're using in the production of the juice or the food product that you're selling is, you know, it may have processing aids, but those processing aids have to come from approved sources.
Right. All the way through.
Yeah.
All the way through.
So you have to check everything.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in the UK, we had a few years ago, we had a scare with, I can't remember what the product was, but it came from a kind of a chili paste or something, and it had an illegal substance in it, and there's a big scare about it. And then in Europe recently, we've had the horse meat scandal.
Right. That was... what year was that? That was like in 2008, I'm going to say.
It wasn't that long ago, but...
I remember that, and that was terrifying.
But as a result of that, you know...
It was in the past 7 years.
That was recent. They've tightened up the regulations in Europe, and though we don't do any we don't trade in meat, but, you know, they're installing...
But
regulations which are affecting us now, so that's why we've got this field to fork.
Right, yeah. Very fascinating.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you really enjoy your work.
Yes, I do, to be honest. I mean, it's an industry, every year is different. So that's what makes it. I mean, to sit in an office and just do the same thing every day, I don't think I could do it.
Yeah. And especially with cider here in the U.S., I must just, you know, you've been walking around here with a smile on your face the whole time.
It's a happy. I mean, it's a nice product. I mean, I love my cider, and it's a nice product.
Yeah.
And as I said earlier, it's the passion that people have here for it. We don't have that in the U.K.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say again, yet.
Yes.
You know, because I could feel, just because I'm very active on Twitter, and I'm starting to see more of the UK folks kind of say, okay, hey, say Cider Chat, and getting more connections, and they're really noticing what's going on here. And who doesn't want to go to that party?
No, absolutely.
You don't want to be part of that party, you know? Like, you don't want to just be sitting on saying, whoa, you don't need an invitation, just come along.
No, exactly, yeah. I make you feel welcome here by everybody, which is nice.
Good. Well, that's good. You are welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's been a really pleasure meeting you.
Yeah, it has been for me as well. Thank you very much. And it's been so exciting coming here to CiderCon.
Thank you so much, Ian, for spending time on Cider Chat. And to Dave Watkins from Fruit Smart. A lot of info in both of these chats, and it is informative to me, and I expect you too, that it gives us a sense of the suppliers. And that's key. It's just not about just making the cider. You have to have the ingredients, really sound quality ingredients and the channels to get those ingredients to your cider house. Now, you might be going out and at the level where you're able to get apples from your neighbors. It works for people. It's rather labor intensive. And there's certain ways to set up one's business. You could bring the juice in. That's also viable too. If you do not indeed have those cider apples available in your own orchard, I have had some very delicious cider this past week at CiderCon made by cideries that have no orchard, and they are actually shipping the cider in. So it's happening, and it's going to continue to happen because you have these international trade folks like Ian and Dave and other juicers around the world. They could do it. We're on a global economy. So, you know, it's tremendous in that way. And I thought that Dave made an interesting point too. He said that, you know, there's going to be box ciders just like there are box wines. And I agree with him. You know, that kind of like very quick made, you know, every 2 months or so, all of a sudden the cidery is producing a new cider. That's going to have a different flavor and mouthfeel than somebody finishing that cider over a period of time, letting it bottle condition, and using orchard apples, you know, just plucked from the backyard, and doing pressing where they're able to do their own maceration. That's, you know, where you press the apples and you have that pumice and you let it sit there a bit, where the pectins break down and there's a little bit of oxidizing, the fruit gets, or the flesh gets a little brownish, and you could do some keeving. We'll be talking about keeving coming up with Neil from Worley Cider. That's going to have a really different flavor than someone who's bringing in a concentrate and producing cider really quickly. And that is what we're going to be seeing in the cider market for a little while, is maybe a shift in two different directions to a very mass produce or quickly produce, because the consumer's walking into that cider bar and saying, hey, what's new this week? And of course, you want to meet the demand, so you kick out a new product, whether or not it is really totally finished or it's taken in that really artisanal style with again, that bottle conditioning. I don't know. It's all good, really. I'm not going to judge and say one is better than the other. I just know what I want to drink more is probably the cider that takes a bit more time and has that blend of both sometimes culinary apples, the eating apples, and the bittersweet apples. That's me. That's what I like. Am I the judge, the all end? No, of course I'm not. If you're making ciders and kicking them out really quickly, well, you might need that for your business model to rock and roll and just get the word out there and get the consumer's palate might be initially expecting a really sweet cider. And then over time, hopefully, again, this is my opinion, their palate may change and they'll want to go a little bit more drier and a little bit more bittersweet. So this is kind of the crossroads. We're at that turning point where we're going to see a lot of different ciders, and it is all good. I want to definitely take time to thank everyone who came up to me during CiderCon to say, hey, I really enjoy listening to the Cider Chat podcast, and just took time to stop me. Thank you. That meant a lot to me. Next week, we're going to have a chat with Darlene Hayes. She wrote the book Cider Cocktails, and that should be very interesting. So get your bourbon out and your gin, and let's shake, shake, shake. Oh, yeah. And let's see, what else do we have going on here? Oh, yeah. And I also want to say thank you to Alan, who wrote a really nice email to me. I landed in Portland airport on my way into CiderCon, and then up popped this little email from folks out in Wisconsin who are starting up a cidery, and they essentially said, you know, when we're kind of feeling down and blue and a little overwhelmed by the all the stuff that you have to do to create a cidery, they listen to the Cider Chat podcast and get inspired, and that just made my day. So thank you, Alan. Good luck to you and your wife with the farm. And I'm sure you'll be getting that cidery open sooner than later. You know, the thing about startups, it takes time. So the key is steady on. Alrighty, well, I'm going to roll out of here now. I'll chat with you next week and with Darlene Hayes. In the meanwhile, I hope you have time to grab that glass and join a chat with friends around a good glass of cider. This is Rhea Windcaller, signing off for now. I look forward to seeing you in Ciderville.